ॐ श्री महागणपतये नमः। ॐ गणानां त्वा गणपतिं हवामहे। कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमम् ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पदान् शृण्वन्नोतिविस्वेदसाधनम्। ॐ श्री महागणपतये नमः। ॐ शुक्लाम्बरधरं विष्णुं शशिवर्णं चतुर्भुजम् प्रसन्नवदनं ध्यायेत् सर्वविघ्नोपशान्तये। गजाननं भूतगणादिसेवितं कपित्तजम्बोफलसारभक्षितम् उमासुतं शोकविनाशकारणम् नमामि विघ्नेश्वरपादपङ्कजम्। ॐ श्री महागणपतये नमः। ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत्। श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। ब्रह्मानन्दं परमसुखदं केवलं ज्ञानमूर्तिं द्वन्द्वातीतं गगनसदृशं तत्त्वमस्याभिलक्ष्यम्। एकं नित्यं विमलमचलं सर्वधि साक्षिभूतं भावातीतं त्रिगुणरहितं सद्गुरुं तं नमामि। ॐ सदाशिवसमारम्भां व्यासशङ्करमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम्। श्रुतिस्मृतिपुराणानाम् आलयं करुणालयम् नमामि भगवत्पादं शङ्करं लोकशङ्करम् शङ्करं शङ्कराचार्यं केशवं बादरायणम्। सूत्रभाष्यकृतौ वन्दे भगवन्तौ पुनः पुनः। ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत्। श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। So namaskars to all of you. We are beginning our class in this world. There are beings and of them we separately take the living beings and we divide the living beings different from the human beings. We distinguish the human beings from other living beings. On what basis we distinguish the human beings from other living beings? There are certain common features among all the living beings, including human beings. And there is certain feature which distinguishes a human being from other living beings. Aharaha, food. Bhayam, fear. Nidra, sleep. Maithunam, reproduction. I repeat these words. Aharaha, food. Bhayam, fear. Nidra, sleep. Maithunam, reproduction of the species. With reference to these four aspects, human beings are the same like animals. Pashuhu means an animal. Pashuhu literally means cow. Pashuhu generally means an animal. So Pashubihi Samanam Naranam. There is a verse, beautiful verse. Naranam Pashubihi Samanam, which means the human beings are the same with reference to these four aspects, four factors. They are like the animals. What means what now? Animals also like the animals means the food we all, the type of food we eat may be different from the type of food the animals eat, animals consume, but still animals also naturally endowed with hunger, appetite, and we are also endowed with hunger, appetite. So we also need to eat food. So we somehow see that we get food to eat. The same way animals, being naturally endowed with hunger, the appetite, animals also somehow work for their food and they get the food. In terms of searching for food, to appease our hunger, animals and we human beings are the same. Then nidra, sleep. We do sleep and animals also need to sleep, they also sleep. There's no difference in terms of this particular aspect of sleeping. We are like animals. There's a time when we are asleep, there's a time when we keep awake. Then bhayam. We say bhayam, the fear, the sense of insecurity is there on the part of animals, on the part of human beings. The fear is a common human fundamental problem, and the fear is also a problem of all the living beings. There is some fear. When something happens, they also get frightened and they also want to save their lives. Animals also make effort to save from themselves from fear. So fear is something common. Then there is something called maithunam. Maithunam means reproduction. So the natural biological need being there on the part of all the living beings. All the living beings really preserve their species through reproduction, which is again, it happens with their own natural instincts. So with reference to this aspect also, human beings are the same, like animals. Okay? Even though they are same with their reference to these four aspects, they are distinguishable from animals. They are different from animals. And human beings are looked upon as the most exalted of the living beings, most sophisticated of the living beings, because of something special that they are endowed with. That is called buddhihi. It is the buddhihi which distinguishes a human being from other beings. Buddhihi here means the discriminative knowledge which the animals lack. What is the discriminative knowledge the animals lack? What is that a human being is endowed with, which makes a human being exalted, which makes the human being most sophisticated? What is the discriminative knowledge? Human being knows I am, and a human being knows this is. I am this. Human being has this knowledge.
Hello.
That I am, and he has this knowledge, this universe. Hello. Is. Therefore, this special knowledge that I am, the self-consciousness, the knowledge I am, is there only on the part of human beings. There is no animal which is endowed with this knowledge I am. Therefore, no animal has the knowledge that there is universe. Animal is alive, it has life, it is naturally endowed with some instincts to search, it has hunger, thirst, it searches for food, it eats its food, it has certain fear, then it has certain fear. Then it reproduces. It reproduces, but no animal has this knowledge that I am. No monkey says I am. No elephant knows I am. No snake knows I am. Which means there is no self-consciousness on the part of living beings. Therefore, they are not qualified to know that there is the world around. They make out something around, but there is no such thing called knowledge that there is a world around. And therefore, the animal cannot know, is not qualified, eligible to know what I am, what this universe is. Therefore, the animal is said to be said to remain steeped in total ignorance. And whereas human being is blessed with this half knowledge, partial knowledge that I am. We don't need to work hard, study, go to universities to get this half knowledge that I am. We are naturally blessed with this knowledge I am. Therefore, we are eligible to know what I am. because as a human being is endowed with this partial knowledge I am, which we call self-consciousness, he is also eligible to know what I am. And his half knowledge can be made total, complete knowledge. So no animal can ever have this total knowledge. There is no way of even getting half knowledge being born an animal. Therefore we say human being is exalted, superior. And second thing, because animal is not endowed with this half knowledge I am, I said already animal is the animal is steeped in total ignorance, and no animal has this knowledge of right and wrong, and all the human beings are naturally blessed with this knowledge of right and wrong, the discriminative knowledge of what is right and what is wrong. We are all naturally blessed with this knowledge. If you ask how do we say that a human being is blessed with this knowledge of right and wrong? If we say every human being knows how others should behave with him, he knows definitely what he expects from others in terms of behavior. For example, if you ask me, do you know what you expect from others in terms of behavior? How do you expect others to behave with you? If you ask me, definitely I can say, I want all those people who mix with me, who are my acquaintances, my friends, to speak the truth to me. I want others not to tell lie to me. I expect that my friends or my people who are in touch with me, my associates, should not cheat me, betray me. I don't want my friends, you know, to rob things which belong to me, steal things which belong to me, to grab things which belong to me. I don't want any of my belongings to be stolen or taken away by me without my knowledge. So I don't want to be cheated. I don't want others to cheat me, betray me. I don't want others to hurt me by word, by thought, by action. So I don't want to get hurt. I don't want others to hurt me with thought, word or deed. I want everybody to be loving and nice to me, kind to me. I expect others to be compassionate to me. This is how I expect from others. This is how I expect everybody to behave with me. This is what I expect from others in terms of behavior. And I know this very well. And as I know this very well, that what I expect from others in terms of behavior, I also know very well that every one of you, that all the human beings in general, expect the same from everybody else in terms of behavior. You will agree with me, there's no doubt about it. So on this basis of what we expect from others in terms of behavior, we know what is right and what is wrong. Because I expect others to speak the truth to me, this my expectation of wanting others to speak the truth to me, not tell a lie to me, not to cheat me, not to see, you know, betray me, not to hurt me, where did they learn? Do I need to go to university to learn this? No, not necessary. Just being born a human being, you know, being born a human being is enough to have this knowledge. One doesn't need any additional qualification to have this knowledge. What is that? Naturally, it is there in me that this is how I expect others. This is what I want others from others. And this same knowledge helps me to understand one more fact, that not only I expect this behavior from others, how I expect from others, the same way every other human being expect the same from everybody else in terms of behavior. Therefore, on the basis of this, my knowledge which is naturally there, I definitely know what is right and what is wrong. Speaking the truth is right, telling lies is wrong, cheating is wrong, not cheating is right, betraying is wrong, not betraying is right, stealing is wrong, non-stealing is right, hurting is wrong, non-hurting is right, injury is wrong, non-injury is right. This is how all of us have this knowledge. And with reference to this knowledge, no human being can say, no, I don't have this knowledge. That is why we call this knowledge now common sense. Okay? All the human beings are blessed with this knowledge of right and wrong. We call it common sense. And this common sense and the self-consciousness that I know I am, at this partial knowledge, and this common sense, the knowledge of right and wrong, is what? Something special for the human being, and this, which distinguishes the human being from other animals. And one more thing, what makes a human being really special is his willpower. Now the whole world is a big confusion. People are saying there's no will. My God. Now the whole teaching is based on this understanding of something called a willpower. Every human being is blessed with the willpower. If you ask me, what is willpower? What is will? The willpower is the capacity to choose to do a given action. So every human being has the capacity to choose to do a given action, which means he can do, or he need not do something, or he can do it differently. Kartum, akartum, anyatha va kartum, shakyam. It is possible for one to choose to do a given action. It is possible for a human being to choose not to do a given action. It is possible for a human being to choose the given action the way he wants to. This capacity to choose to do a given action, to do, not to do, to do it differently, is called willpower. And human being alone is endowed with this will. Okay, animals do not have this will. It's called faculty of choice. Is not there. Faculty of choice is not that. They're all programmed. Animals are programmed. If you ask me, please tell us, how do you say that they are programmed? they don't have will, they don't have this faculty of choice, and human being alone has this faculty of choice. How do you say? Please tell us. If you say, I can tell you. If you visit your friend's house and the friend has a dog, I tell you, you may be the closest, thickest friend to your friend whom you visit, but for the dog you are a stranger. He never met you before. When you visit him, doesn't matter whether you are a close friend or a stranger. You know, whoever visits newly, the dog has to show. Immediately it will start barking. There is no such thing called will, okay? So I should not bark, they are my boss's friends, I should not bark at them. So to bark, not to bark, to bark afterwards, the choice is not there. It is programmed to bark at any stranger. So also the cow, take for example, in this country we don't have cows in the houses. In India and villages back home we used to have cows. And our cows go out for grazing, and on the way it is coming back, it sees, suppose, it sees some front, some lawn, it sees some green lawn, it will not think, come on, I'm going on my way back home, my house. It is somebody else's house, and somebody else's lawn, they worked very hard to maintain this lawn. I should not enter there, I should not eat the grass. Even if I want to, I should ask this person's permission. Or should I eat or not? Will they eat okay for them or not? The cow does not think, I should eat or not eat, I should go. No. Something green it sees is programmed. When you see something green, grass, go and eat. It's your food. Cow has no choice. Understand? This is called being programmed. So we are not programmed. I also go for a walk every day, even though not every day, quite often. On the way, my way back, I see in front of the houses beautiful roses. I do feel like plucking few of them, even though as sadhus we don't pluck flowers and harm, hurt the plant, cause any pain to the plant. But so roses are so beautiful. Sometimes I feel, I wish they not pluck few for the pujas. But I don't do it. No way. I have will. I like them. I want to pluck, but I don't pluck. No way. I use my will not to pluck. Even if I want to have, I may go in. I think before, should I go in or not? Should I talk to the owner of the house or not? Can I ask him permission to pluck or not? Or shall I steal and go away or not? I have choice. I can use my will to steal it without telling him, or to pluck it with his permission, or to pluck it without his permission, or to come back without plucking also. This will I have. Do you understand the difference now? This is how a human being is blessed with this free will to do, not to do. Why I'm talking this is very, very important to understand the whole teaching. Has to begin with this basic understanding. Okay, this is how a human being is different from animals. Three aspects I have to remember. The self-consciousness, the knowledge I am, makes the human being special. It distinguishes from animals. And knowledge of right and wrong, which animals do not have, this distinguishes human being from animals. And the will, the capacity to choose to do a given action, distinguishes human being from animals. The three things which make human being sophisticated, superior. Therefore, because of this, this is called buddhihi. These three efforts implied by the word buddhihi. And because of this, there is something called artha for a human being, something called goal. Because he is a self-conscious being, because he is endowed with this knowledge of right and wrong, because he is endowed with this capacity, willpower to choose to do a given action or to refrain from some action, he is said to have a purpose in this life, which means there is something called the end to be accomplished. He can plan out his work, then he can work out his plan. That is possible for him. There is something called the end. Therefore, and there is a means to accomplish the end. A human being alone has a goal to be accomplished and the means to accomplish the end. And we call it what now? Purushartha. You have to learn this word Purushartha. Artha literally means wealth, but Artha means that which is sought after. Arthyate iti Artha. That which is sought after is called Artha. And Purushena Arthyate iti Purushartha. That which is sought after by a human being is called Purushartha. Purushaha generally means, the word Purushaha has many meanings. Man, person. But here Purushartha means a human pursuit. That which is pursued by a human being, that which is fundamentally sought by a human being, is called Purushartha. I want all of you to pick up this word Purushartha. And here we understand there are four Purusharthas. The Shastram, our scriptures, talk about the four human pursuits, which means there is no fifth pursuit. Whatever a human being wants to achieve, whatever a human being wants to attain, whatever a human being wants to have, possess, own, enjoy in this life, all that one wants to accomplish, all that one wants to achieve in this life, irrespective of whatever is the object of desire, irrespective of whatever that is wanted to, one wants to achieve, attain, reach, enjoy in this world, all that is wanted by any human being, anytime, anywhere in the world, can be brought under the category of these, either of these four. It can be. Doesn't matter what a person wants to achieve. It must be either artha, it must come under the category of artha, or kamaha, or dharmaha, or mokshaha. We call these four pursuits, I'm given the names here, artha, kamaha, dharmaha and mokshaha. I'll repeat, artha, kamaha, dharmaha and mokshaha. Artha actually, whatever one pursues for feeling secure, for being secure, is artha. If you ask me what do you mean by artha? Artha literally means wealth, money. But as a pursuit, as a human pursuit, artha means anything which is sought after by a human being for his security is called artha. Therefore, artha implies security. Now you can understand what is that a man really, what is that man really pursues for security? If you analyze, first thing will come to mind what? What is that which makes a man feel secure? Money. If you have some money, then you feel secure. If you have job which helps you earn the money regularly, which gets you regular income, you feel secure. And if you have some assets, properties, if they make you feel secure, because possessing the wealth, possessing assets, possessing properties really makes one feel secure. All one's possessions, because sthavara and jangama, mobile, immobile properties. In India, capital wealth also is wealth, isn't it? That's why it is jangama. And sthavara means all these assets like house, land, etc. All the possessions. So money, wealth in any form really makes one feel secure. Therefore, it comes under the category of artha. A not only money, wealth, assets, properties, etc. What about manpower? You have money power is for security. Why do you want to have money power? Security. Why do you want to have manpower? I know so many people. Why Facebook? Why do you want to develop your contacts? Why? Why do you want to have more friends? Why do you want to have, in India is a big thing, getting married into big families. No, I want to have a daughter-in-law from a very big family who has 105 uncles and 10 aunties, you know, and they're all married into big families, so big manpower. Why? Because, you know, if I know so many people, being known to so many people, having many people known to me, makes me feel secure. So manpower is for security. Money power is for security. And any influence one wants to have, and there's always constant effort on some people, the more the person is insecure, the more he wants to have influence on other people. Really. I want to have certain say. I want to influence people. If I say, they should listen. You know, because that means I should have say over. Which means somehow I should command respect. I should make people oblige what I say. Influencing. So being influential, wanting to have influence society is for security. Influence is for security. Manpower, money power, influence. Even having more friends, nothing wrong. Very natural. If you really analyze, because you feel secure. All for security. Marriage, family, children, relatives, everything is basically for what? Makes you feel secure. Understand? Therefore, security, when you say artha is a pursuit, means don't think just earning money and having money. Anything a human being pursues in order to feel secure, for his security, comes under the category of artha. Now you can include, I have not listed, I have not really given a big list of things. what all you want to have just to feel secure is artha. Okay? And this is a common human pursuit. Every human being, nobody needs to deny here, no, I don't pursue artha. I don't really feel insecure. I don't seek security. Don't need to feel shy about it. It's a common human pursuit. Everybody, irrespective of who the person is, rich or poor or young or old, educated and uneducated, all the human beings, man or woman, irrespective of which national he is, which culture he belongs to, this is a common human pursuit. All the human beings seek security, and through varieties of things. Therefore, artha. Okay, see, purushartha. Then, the next pursuit is kamaha. Kamaha, the word kamaha literally means desire. Kamaha here means pleasure. So pleasure is the, again, common human pursuit. There's nobody, no human being in the world who does not want pleasure at all. I don't want any pleasures in the world. If there's somebody and he is not a human being with a stone, okay, a stone or a rock, piece of rock, a piece of wood, then if you're a human being, it's very natural for one to be inclined for the enjoyment of pleasures. And this pleasure again, so because seeking security is something which is very, very natural thing for a human being. Not even a human being, any living being in general, we already seen that. Any living being seeks security. And human being, of course, as an intelligent man, he also seeks security. And of course, a constant, really continuous effort on the part of human being to do things to feel secure and to achieve things which make him feel secure. In the process, he really gets very, very tired. You know, therefore, he needs a change in his routine. So whatever a human being pursues, does as a change from his routine, is a pleasure. It's a pursuit of pleasure. If we work the whole week, whole every day, and you come back in the evening, you want to switch on television. Why? Change from the routine. You want to listen to classical music. Go to YouTube or do turn on something else, some tape recorder or some CD player. You want to listen to some music. Why? Because change from the routine. Or you do some japam, you do some prayer, anything. You do a change from the routine is a pleasure. Therefore, we say here again, in keeping with the maturity of a human being, his objects of pleasure also differ from person to person. There are some people who really, you know, the pleasure means not just simply, you know, simply say the same pleasures all the people want. One person may go to come back home, take his wife and children and go to a park or go to a cinema or go to a theater, or other person can take his family to some restaurant nearby, same old pasta, let us not eat, let us go out and eat something, some food outside, pay more, eat outside, come back. Why? Because in changing the routine, you always derive pleasure. What do you do it for? Why should you not eat the food in the house itself? Why should you go out and eat? And why should you, even after filling your stomach with utter food, eat one more pudding or ice cream you order for? Why? It's not for calorie, not for any strength, not for health, it is for your pleasure. Is it like this? The pleasures, objects of pleasure vary. So we call them, they are for the pleasure, for the sense organs, really, they derive the pleasure. No, for really satisfying the sense organs. And we call them sensory pleasures. So the such and things which are really sought for satisfying your senses, call them sensory pleasures. And sometimes you also come back home and throw away everything and take some nice books from the shelf, you pick up and you read. Sit and just read. Even the reading is a strenuous action because it needs your attention. It is not an easy thing. It's some nice, really classical works when you read. And really, then why? Why do you do it? You worked whole day, worked very hard. You don't read something light. Not you don't read something, some ordinary daily newspaper. And not you go and see what is there on Yahoo News. You really go take a classical book and sit and read. It's a change from the routine. Why do you do it? Because there is some pleasure, you derive some pleasure in reading such classical works. We call it intellectual pleasure. It's the change. I want to understand anything a man pursues as a change from his routine is a pleasure. We call it intellectual pleasure. And also, sometimes you plan your holidays. Go all, even though Britain is full of so many parks around your houses, the same old roses and same old flowers you see, still you want to go out to Lake District, you want to go to, you know, that Wales, you want to go to some other place to be in the presence of mountains or somewhere you see big, you know, pastures, where you see big other places, the lakes are the waterfalls or something when you go. Why? Why should you plan that? What is it which prompts you to plan such picnics and then holidays and things? Why can't you sit in the same house? And you have to come back to the same house. This is your home. But still you go out because change is a pleasure. You go out spending money. In fact, you don't really, there's no security. In fact, when you plan your holidays, this is not for security. When you go out and eat, it's not for security. When you go out, you know, to really watch a movie, it's not for security. In fact, you lose some security in the form of money to have that pleasure, kama. Because when you go out, when you are with the mountains, when you are with the rivers, when you are with the ocean, when you are with this, when you're on the seaside, seashore, when you're with the nature, actually, you derive some pleasure. Okay, therefore, being with the nature, appreciating the natural beauty, you derive some pleasure, and that is called aesthetic pleasure. Okay, like this, a man pursues three types of pleasures in keeping with his taste, level of understanding. So sensory pleasures, intellectual pleasures, and aesthetic pleasures is all not for security, but just to have a change from his regular monotonous work routine. So fine art, music, dance, all these things you can, you know, everything. Art itself is for pleasure. Therefore, this is artha and kamaha. Now you can understand this artha and kamaha should go hand in hand, which means one cannot just pursue only artha without just completely not having kama at pleasure at all in one's life. It is the pleasure, the change in his routine really gives him some strength to go back and to go ahead with his artha pursuit. You know, every time he takes a break and he gets himself charged with more energy and enthusiasm and to go back to the monotonous work. This is how artha and kama are pursued. And in artha and kama, if you ask, why does man pursue artha and kama at all? You can say he is pursuing artha, he is pursuing, no, actually for security and pleasures he want to relieve him from some the boredom he has in pursuing artha. And this is how to live his life. One needs to pursue artha and kama. One needs to really work for things which make him feel secure. One, it is a must for one to live his life. One needs to pursue artha and kama, security and pleasure. So the animals actually stop here. There is no such thing called purushartha. There is no such thing called pursuit for an animal. There is no mriga pashu artha, pashu artha. There is no such thing called, you know, animal pursuit. There is only pursuit means only human pursuit. Human being alone has this pursuit. Therefore we say some, now comes the dharmaha. In Tamil we say porul, inbam, dharma is aram, dharmaha. And the word dharmaha, there's no, see, when I said artaha, I can say the word artaha, literally it means that which is sought after, that which is sought, that which is searched is artaha. But I said it, what is implied by the word artaha is security. Even the word kamaha literally means desire. What is implied by the word kamaha is pleasure, which is sought by a human being. And dharmaha, here, I can't give an equivalent word from any of the European languages. Dharmaha has to be understood as dharmaha only. There is no equivalent English word for dharmaha. And dharanat dharmaha iti uchyate. That which upholds everything is called dharma. The word dharmaha means order, the natural law and order. Is implied. What is implied by the word dharma is the natural law and order, and which is universal. The universal natural law and order, dharmaha. It is not a direct meaning, it is the implied meaning there. Then we say the dharmaha is a human pursuit means doing what is right is dharmaha. So in this context, you cannot understand the meaning, what is actually implied by the word dharmaha completely. One cannot have the complete understanding of the word dharmaha right now. The more and more and more you study the scripture, which we have started now, the more and the more you understand the teaching of the scriptures, the more and more you will appreciate dharma. So the total, complete understanding, appreciation of the meaning of the word dharmaha is possible only when your clarity enhances. So which you will find in due course of time. As you are studying with me, as you understand, in due course of time, you will come to know that how you really understand the word dharma, meaning of the word dharma. So here, initially, we can have at least limited understanding of the word dharma here. So doing the right is dharma. Doing the right means what? What is dharma here? So knowing one's duties. Because every human being, knowing one's duties and doing their one's duties is dharma. Simple meaning. Which means every individual as a human being, as an individual, has to play many roles. One person does not play only one role. Every individual is a relative being, and therefore he has to play different roles. In playing every role, there are certain duties which he has to do. As a man, as a father, duties are there. As a husband, duties are there. As a professional, duties are there. As a social being, the duties are there. As a friend, duties are there. As a son, duties are there. You know, in keeping with the role play, the duties differ. The duties vary. But all those role plays have to be played well. Which means all those duties must be performed. Duties must be really fulfilled. Which is dharma. So doing one's duties is here. In fact, helps one to contribute for not disturbing the social order. When we do our duties correctly, we are contributing for the non-disturbance of the social order. Some link, you may understand, how does my doing my duties contributes for non-disturbance of the social order. Something important, isn't it? Therefore, doing one's duties is dharma. And here, in playing one's role, in doing one's actions as duties, all those actions are definitely must be in conformity with values, one's knowledge of values, right and wrong. Okay, whatever is in one's knowledge of right and wrong, we call it a value. What I value. Isn't it? That which is valued by everyone is called a value. So my actions must be in conformity with these universal values. Such as speaking the truth, not telling lies, not stealing, not cheating, not betraying, not hurting. These are the universal values, universally acceptable for all the people, by all the people, always, everywhere, the universal values. So the one's actions, must be in conformity with these universal values. That is dharma. which is called, otherwise called, righteousness. So we understand righteousness alone is not dharma. Okay, dharma is not just the righteousness, but righteousness is dharma. Being righteous always what? Dharma. Being righteous implies what? Having one's actions in conformity with universal values. Is dharma, is righteous. So having one's actions in conformity with these universal values, which is called righteousness, is also called what? The ethic, being ethical, ethics, human ethics. It is dharma. Apart from that, so being charitable, being helpful for others, doing the needful with presence of mind in any given situation immediately. Doing the needful in a given situation, presence of mind immediately is also what? Dharma. You see somebody bleeding, lying on the road. Yes, you happen to come. Won't you have the courtesy to immediately call and tell, I see somebody on the road. Even though you don't need to take. Just informing some people. Which you don't need to think, oh, should I call or not? Maybe I don't know about this. Generally, you know, immediately you do the needful. It's presence of mind. It's all dharma. So dharma here has mainly, it has to be understood as what? Doing one's actions in conformity with one's knowledge of right and wrong. In conformity with the universal values is dharma. So as I told you, dharma is not just the righteousness, not just the ethics. The dharma is appreciation of the universal natural law and order, and being in harmony, in tune with, living in tune with that universal natural law and order is dharma. Okay? And which we'll understand in due course of time. And now the next end is there. Next purushartha is called mokshaha. We have seen artha, kamaha, dharmaha, and you're going to see mokshaha. The word mokshaha itself means freedom. It has come from the root much. It is mochanam, vimochanam. It means mokshaha. Mukuhu, there are synonyms. Mokshaha means freedom, which means freedom is a human pursuit, which means a human being is seeking freedom, is a seeker of freedom. Then the question should ask, what does he seek the freedom from? Definitely, every human being is seeking freedom from the unwanted, undesirable. And what is unwanted, what is undesirable for the human being. Sorrow. Manasa tapaha. Manasa tapaha means the unbearable, intolerable desirable, unwanted mental agony, sorrow. A human being always constantly seeking freedom from the unwanted sorrow. The universally, what is not wanted by all the human beings, always, everywhere, irrespective of whether a person is Hindu or a Christian or a Muslim or whatever he is, what is not wanted by anyone is sorrow, dukkham. Therefore, dukkha nivrittihi is mokshaha. Freedom from sorrow is mokshaha. Which means, you can understand freedom from sorrow. Man seeks freedom from sorrow, dukkham means, man, what does he want then? If sorrow is unwanted, what is wanted then? Happiness. Therefore, the word moksha directly means freedom. Indirectly, it implies happiness. Which means a human being seeks happiness. Seeks happiness. Therefore, the word moksha does not directly mean happiness. The implied meaning of the word moksha is what? Happiness. What is the direct meaning of the word moksha? Freedom. Which means moksha is a human pursuit. Which means human being is seeking freedom from something unwanted. Nobody will want freedom from something wanted, desirable. Freedom is always wanted from what? Something unwanted, undesirable. What is undesirable for one? It is dukkham, sorrow, unhappiness, sadness, grief, emotional pain, tormenting, harassing pain, emotional pain, mental agony. Therefore, which is called freedom from sorrow, implies what? Happiness. So man is a searcher, seeker of happiness. And this is where our shastra, the scripture, stops us and tells us to think, come on. As a human being, you have to live this life choicelessly. What choice do you have being born a human being? Don't you need to live this life? You have to live this life. To live this life, don't you need an infrastructure? You need. Because if you have infrastructure, you will secure. Without the infrastructure, not having infrastructure required to live really makes you feel very insecure. Therefore, to live this life, all the basic infrastructure you need, you know, you pursue. So all of them, really what we put one word as what? Security. If you ask, why do you pursue artha? Why do you want to have, I gave a big list of things. Oh, I want that, I need that, I need that, I need money, I need wealth, I need assets, I need possessions, I need wealth, I need manpower, I need money power, I need influence, I need friends, I need to have everything, because then all they make me feel secure. Even I need temple, I need church, I need mosque, I need to worship, I need to pray. Everything is for what ultimately? You know, I want to be known as a good person in the society. Recognition as a good person also is for what? Your own security. It makes you feel secure. I don't want to be the bad books of people. I want to be very diplomatic. You know, don't want any enmity with other people. Why? Makes me feel secure. I tell you, Shastra Masya, what do you want to pursue security for? What do you want to pursue artha for? For security. I pursue artha for security. If you pursue artha for security, what do you pursue artha? Why do you pursue artha for security? Why do you want security? Why do you want to be secure? Why do you want to be secure? You pursue artha for security, fine. Why do you want to be secure? Why do you seek security? Because I can be happy in being secure. I want security for happiness. Therefore, Shastram says, you pursue artha for security, but through security, what you ultimately seek is happiness, mokshaha. Freedom from the undesirable sorrow. And next question comes, what do you want to pursue pleasures for? Why do you want to enjoy pleasures? Why do you want sensory pleasures? Why do you want intellectual pleasure? Why do you want aesthetic pleasures? Why do you want to have any type of pleasure? Why? What do you pursue pleasures for? You have to say, no, the pleasures really, no, the enjoyment of pleasures really make me happy. So, you pursue pleasures for your happiness. Ultimately for happiness. Security is ultimately for happiness. Pleasures are ultimately for happiness. Next question comes, why do you want to be righteous? Why do you do your duties? Why do you want to be ethical? Why do you pursue dharma? Because even pursuit of dharma is for my own happiness, your own happiness. Ultimately, what I seek through the pursuit of artha, kama, dharma is happiness. I will not pursue something which makes me feel secure if there is no happiness in it. I will not pursue an object of given object of pleasure if there is no happiness in it. Then there is anything that is unhappiness, I want run away from that. Because nobody can stand unhappiness, nobody can stand mental agony, nobody can stand the pain. We all want to get off. It's not one person, not one. All of us want to get rid of anything that causes this mental discomfort and pain. That is why That is why we avoid meeting people whom somebody, sometimes behavior causes pain. We don't want to see the person, don't want to talk to the person, want to keep away from the person, we want to keep away from the things, because those things trigger your pain. What I want to say here is not, I'm not saying that actually it's not right to do that, because all of us always want to be happy. There is an urge. I want to be happy. I want to be happy. No, I want to be happy always, everywhere, with everybody. Which means I want to be limitlessly happy. I want to be happy only with this person means a limited happiness. I want to be happy with everybody. I want to be happy always. I want to be happy everywhere. So wanting to be happy always, everywhere, with everybody is what? Being limitlessly happy. I want limitless happiness. The limitless happiness is my, what now? I should not be unhappy at all anytime. I should not be unhappy at all anywhere. I should not be unhappy at all with anybody. There is this natural urge. Understand? Therefore, happiness. No, I want to be unhappy for some time. I don't mind. I want unhappiness. Who can tell this? Nobody in the world can say this. Without wanting to be wanting to be unhappy or only adequately more than what we have, isn't it? We have more unhappiness. Therefore, what Shastram tells is, of course, to live the life you need to choicelessly pursue artha. But for infrastructure you require to live this life, you need to pursue artha in the form of wealth, money, etc. But you're seeking security through artha, isn't it? There is no real security. Artha is relatively, artha can bless you with relative security, but there is no guarantee that it will give you happiness. Okay, which means what you seek through artha, kama, dharma is happiness, freedom from unhappiness. Therefore, you can reduce all the three into one. You can say what now? Actual pursuit of the human being is the moksha, happiness. Therefore, Shastram says, moksha parama purushartha. The exalted of the pursuits, the absolute human pursuit, the human end is moksha. It is not something to be pursued at the time of death. It is a common human natural urge that I want to be happy always, everywhere, with everybody. Therefore, this happiness is something all the time, through all the pursuit, through everything, which is sought after by every human being. That is why it's a common human universal end, moksha, which is happiness. Nothing what has been said contradicts your reasoning. Isn't it true? This is the strength of Shastram. When Shastram begins, nothing will contradict our reasoning. That is the greatness of Shastram. And it really makes us think. And this is where we understand, yes, scripture says, you have to pursue artha and kama to live this life. But your artha and kama pursuit must be in conformity with the dharma, ultimately for accomplishing the end called moksha. And we have to remember one important thing. This moksha is a choiceless end. You cannot say, no, I don't want moksha. I don't want to pursue moksha. I don't care for moksha. I'm not interested in moksha. I will leave that. It is not like you wanted pasta or Chinese or Italian. What do you want to eat? Which food do you want? You have choice. Do you want happiness or unhappiness? Do you have any choice here? It is a choiceless end. Unless and until this end called moksha becomes accomplished, you will be a constant, continuous, endless searcher and seeker. This has to be accomplished. That is why it is a choiceless end. Moksha, you see, moksha being a choiceless, ultimate, common, human, choiceless, ultimate end must be very clear. Today, now, you must go home with this understanding, moksha is my choiceless end. There is no doubt here. And it is not for the one who is in the deathbed, not for the one who is sick and then unhappy. No, it's that every human being is searching for this. Therefore, now what do we say? Through artha by seeking security, through kama by seeking pleasures, through the dharma, by living a life of dharma, values, doing one's duties also, what I ultimately seek is happiness. Therefore, the ultimate end, the absolute end is mokshaha. And other ends, artha, kama, dharmas are relative ends. The absolute end is mokshaha. This we should know very clearly. What is the absolute end for a human being? Mokshaha. What is the ultimate end for a human being? Mokshaha. What is the only exalted end for a human being? Mokshaha. What about artha, kama, dharma? Should they be pursued or not? They should be pursued. But there are relative ends. So artha and kama should not become the ultimate end. The relative end should not be mistaken for the absolute end. So relative ends means artha kamas ought to be pursued here in conformity with dharma. For what? Ultimately to accomplish moksha. If it is very clear, then you can say you are a person of purushartha nischayaha. You are a person of purushartha nischayaha. The person of purushartha nischayaha means the Sanskrit expression, I wanted to know this. Being definite about one's ultimate end being mokshaha, pursuit of happiness. Being doubtless, being clear about one's ultimate end being choiceless, that is mokshaha. There should not be any doubt, what am I living this life for? I'm living this life ultimately for accomplishing this end called mokshaha. Okay? And what do I pursue this artha for? And to live the life, I am pursuing artha and kama. Artha kamas have to be pursued for living this life. But I am living this life for accomplishing moksha. And this is where actually one's study begin. Only now the study can begin. Without this clarity of what am I living this life for, what is purusharthas are, what these human pursuits are, what are the relative ends, what is the absolute end. Without this understanding, the Shastra study does not make any sense. And here comes the question, why do I seek happiness? Why do I seek freedom from sorrow? Because happiness, search for happiness, seeking happiness is a natural emotional urge. See, desire for food is a natural biological need, isn't it? Biological problem. I'm hungry, I have to eat food. What choice do you have in eating food? Oh, let me not eat, doesn't matter if I don't eat. How can you say that? How long can you say that? You have to eat food when you're hungry. To appease the hunger, you have to eat food, because appeasing hunger, hunger is a natural, biological, physical problem. It has to be addressed. So also when you're thirsty, do you have any choice? No, I won't drink any water. You have to drink water, because being thirsty is a discomfort, isn't it? Feeling thirsty is a discomfort, and you have to quench your thirst. It's a natural biological problem. It has to be addressed. You have no choice. So anything which is natural, you have no choice. You have to fulfill it. Do you want to watch what want to buy television? You can say, no, I want to, but I'm not very keen. If you don't buy television, nothing will happen. But do you want to eat? Do you want to drink? You have no choice there. So you can buy television, you need not buy television, or you can manage without it. But can you manage without eating? Can you manage without drinking forever? No. Which means the natural urges cause the discomfort, and you have to address, you have to fulfill it. Similarly, I want to eat is a natural thing, expression of a natural problem. I want to drink water is a natural biological problem. So I want to be happy is a natural emotional expression of a need problem. Therefore, it is also what it has to be addressed. Therefore, happiness, seeking happiness is expression of a human natural emotional urge. Okay? Is it clear? Therefore, and here the Shastra says, the scripture says, this happiness that which you are seeking, you are seeking because you are unhappy. The unhappiness is because of the problems you have in life, and these all the so-called problems which are taken to be responsible for unhappiness is because of some error in your understanding. Really speaking, you are searching for something which you need not search at all. You're searching for something which you need not search at all. You need not work hard at all. What does it mean here? You can always attain something which you do not have. But which something which you already have, which you already are, need not be attained, but still you are searching. Which means, the scripture says, you are searching for happiness because you do not know what happiness is. Not knowing what happiness is the cause for your unhappiness. Therefore, if not knowing what happiness is the cause for your unhappiness, what does it mean? You are ignorant of what happiness is. So knowing what happiness is, what? Taking ownership of what you already have. Not knowing what happiness is cause for unhappiness, and knowing what happiness is what? Attainment of happiness as though you are attaining it. And here you jump and say, my God, I already have happiness, I am searching for happiness. Then why do I become unhappy then? If I am already having happiness, why should I get unhappy then? My God, most of the time I am unhappy. All of them are unhappy. Sometimes I am unhappy. My God, anything anybody says I get unhappy. Every small thing makes me unhappy. Why do I get unhappy then? If you know what happiness is, then you will, in your understanding, be only happiness. If you don't know what happiness is, then everything and anything will trigger your unhappiness. So what is the solution now? Happiness is already there, which means happiness is something which is covered by ignorance. For example, I tell you, maybe six, seven years ago, I was very, very new for this word iPod. iPod was a new word for me. I was living in East London a few years ago. There was a young boy, and he was telling me, he was asking for his iPod. The dad took him, I remember him very well, he got him iPod for £65 something. I don't remember, that time it was expensive. A small iPod. He came and told me, how many, you know, I can record so many, hundreds of thousands of songs, I can record this. And he talked to me so much. But he never showed me what it was, okay? And then he just told me, Swamiji, please, he wore his shoes, and he was standing outside in Red Bridge, I was living. Standing outside and near the door, he said, Pomni, would you please get me my iPod? It was just a small thing, it was there on the chair. I didn't know what iPod was, and I was seeing it all the time. I just walked up and down. What do you say? Where is it? It's there on the chair, please get it for me. I came back again. I was not blind. I saw the iPod, but I did not pick it up or to give it him. Why? iPod was not covered by anything, it's a small thing, isn't it? Very clear. And the sofa. There's light also. I did not pick up the iPod because... Why? What covered the iPod from being seen? Not the light. Light was there. iPod was there. My eyes were okay. I did not know what iPod was. My ignorance of what iPod was really covered that iPod. Then that boy told me, he came back and he took it. This is what is iPod, he showed me. Understand? So what I want to say, ignorance covers things. Similarly, ignorance of what happiness is, even though happiness is right there in front of you, as very you, as everything, but happiness is covered. therefore, by our own ignorance of what happiness is. Therefore, knowing what happiness is, what? Discovery of happiness. And discovery of happiness is attainment of happiness. Really speaking, we never attain happiness. We only discover happiness. Discovery of happiness is accomplishment of the absolute end called moksha. Okay? The rest will continue in the next class. And any doubts you have in what I have taught, if you have, you are welcome to email me your doubts, or you can talk to me when you are free. When you see me online, if I am free, if you are free, you can clarify any doubts you have in whatever you have heard today. In whatever I said today, any doubts you have, please feel free to email me or to talk to me in person on Skype. Whenever you see me online, you can feel free to talk to me. I can clarify any doubts you have in whatever I have said to you. And I want it to be with me step by step, so that nothing should be vague in your understanding. Okay, this is my request, and it is time now. So, are you okay?
Yeah.
2 more minutes actually. Need 2 more minutes. Anyway, 20:58. So I'll stop with this today. We'll continue. I'll recap next week. I'll briefly present what I have said today. Then I'll continue with my new lessons next class. Okay.